Imagine your daily commute for a second. You've got your coffee, you're listening to your favorite morning show, and your eyes are naturally scanning the road ahead.
Right, you're just on autopilot.
Exactly. You're looking out for the usual suspects. You're watching for the distracted driver drifting into your lane. You're anticipating the sudden red brake lights from the car in front of you. And, you're keeping an eye out for someone trying to beat a yellow light at an intersection.
Because that's what we're trained to do.
Right. We are deeply conditioned, I mean, almost purely by instinct at this point, to look for danger coming at us horizontally, from the side, from the front, or from behind.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But what happens when the actual ground beneath your tires, like the very foundation you are driving on, just completely gives way?
Oh, man. Well, it completely shatters our most fundamental assumption of safety. I mean, we inherently trust the ground we walk on, right? And by extension, we trust the pavement we drive our vehicles on at like 60 miles per hour. When that physical trust is broken, it's not just startling, it is incredibly dangerous because you have absolutely zero time to react.
And that profound breach of trust is exactly what we are exploring in today's deep dive.
It's a heavy topic.
It really is. We're looking at this really eye-opening body of information from the law offices of Norman Gershon regarding roadway failures, and specifically the serious car accidents they cause throughout Westchester County and New York City.
Which is a massive area to cover.
Huge. So our mission today is to uncover the hidden physical dangers of our aging infrastructure, unravel the surprisingly complex and frankly intimidating web of legal liability when a road literally fails, and examine how high-stakes personal injury law operates when you are suddenly forced to go up against a municipality.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Completely. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because the physical realities we are dealing with here are just intense. The source material grounds us immediately in a terrifying real-world example. There was a recent partial roadway collapse on the southbound Sawmill River Parkway, right near Hastings on Hudson.
Right. And for anyone familiar with the geography of New York, I mean, the Sawmill is not some forgotten dirt back road.
No, not at all.
It is a vital, heavily traveled, high-speed artery. Thousands of people rely on it.
Yeah, and the investigations mentioned in the text indicated that this collapse was a combination of a severely deteriorated drainage pipe buried deep beneath the roadway, and that was compounded by heavy rainfall.
The rain always makes it worse.
Always. And fortunately, the New York State Department of Transportation had to mobilize incredibly fast to shut down portions of the parkway. The quick action by those road crews prevented what could have easily escalated into a catastrophic series of multi-car
Oh,
crashes.
absolutely.
But reading this, it makes me think of these roads as suffering from a kind of hidden structural rot, like it's like a tooth with a deep cavity, but it's even more insidious than that.
How so?
Well, from the surface, the asphalt looks perfectly fine, but underneath, the structure is totally hollowed out. You have absolutely no idea it's compromised until you apply pressure, or, in this case, drive a 2-ton vehicle over it, and the entire surface just caves in.
That is a terrifying visual.
Right. So I have to ask, is this just a freak accident, or is this a systemic issue for anyone driving between White Plains, Yonkers, and New York City?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the material makes it incredibly clear that this is a systemic escalating concern. We aren't just looking at one isolated rusty pipe in Hastings on Hudson. Westchester County relies on a massive interconnected network of highways. The text specifically highlights the Bronx River Parkway, the Hutchinson River Parkway, the Springbrook Parkway.
Oh, yeah, the Springbrook is always packed.
Right, and the Taconic State Parkway, the Cross County Parkway, I-287, and New York State Thruway.
I mean, you are basically naming the daily circulatory system for hundreds of thousands of commuters in the region.
Precisely. And the infrastructure supporting those tens of thousands of daily vehicles is under constant attack from invisible enemies.
Invisible enemies like what?
Well, you have heavy concentrated rainfall that aggressively washes away the subbase. That's the foundational dirt and gravel holding the asphalt up.
Got it.
You also have aging drainage systems and failing culverts, which are the underground tunnels meant to carry streams safely beneath the traffic. But the text points to one of the most relentlessly destructive forces of all, which is the freeze-thaw cycle.
We hear that term a lot every winter, right? Freeze thaw.
Yeah, it's a buzzword on the local news.
Exactly. But mechanically speaking, how does weather actually destroy solid concrete and asphalt from the inside out?
So think of it like a metal wedge being hammered repeatedly into a solid log of wood. It starts small. Water from rain or, melting snow seeps into microscopic hairline cracks in the pavement. Or, It pools in the soil right beneath the road surface. And then, when the temperature drops below freezing overnight, that water turns to ice. And as we know from basic physics, water expands when it freezes.
Right.
That expansion acts exactly like that steel wedge. It creates immense outward hydraulic pressure, widening those tiny cracks and physically pushing the soil and asphalt apart.
Oh, wow. So it's actively wedging the structure open.
Yes. And then the sun comes up, the temperature rises, and the ice melts. But the road doesn't shrink back perfectly together.
It stays pushed apart.
Exactly. It leaves behind a slightly larger void.
Yeah.
So the next time it rains, more water flows into that newly expanded space. It freezes again, expands further, and creates an even larger cavity.
Just compounding over time.
Over decades. This relentless cycle of expanding ice and melting water hollows out the foundation beneath the road. Eventually, the structural integrity reaches a tipping point, leading to severe pavement erosion, hidden sinkholes, and sudden, catastrophic structural failure.
And the consequences of that failure are just completely different from a standard traffic accident. Like, if you slam on your brakes to avoid a deer, your car is at least dissipating kinetic energy over a certain distance.
Right, you're slowing down.
Exactly.
Right.
But when a roadway collapses, the stopping distance is zero. The road literally swallows the momentum. The source details the ripple effects of this. You have the initial single vehicle crashes into the sinkhole or the collapse section, but that violently abrupt stop triggers multi-vehicle pileups, severe motorcycle and truck accidents, rollovers, and loss of control collisions.
The kinetic energy transfer in these events is just devastating.
Mm.
And you also have to consider the secondary crashes happening hundreds of yards behind the initial collapse.
Oh, right, because of the traffic backing up.
Exactly. When a vital artery fails, traffic unexpectedly comes to a dead halt. If you were driving a mile behind the collapse, rounding a blind curve at 50 miles per hour, and traffic has suddenly stopped dead with no warning,
you're going right into the back of them.
You are in a prime scenario for a high-speed, severe rear-end collision. The zone of danger radiates far outward from the actual physical site of the failure.
That's terrifying. So, okay, we have established this terrifying physical reality of the ground dropping out, but I want to pivot to the legal aftermath.
Okay, let's do it.
Because if a distracted driver texting on their phone rear-ends you, the liability is usually straightforward. You call the police, you look at the damage, driver A clearly hit driver B, and the insurance companies figure it out.
It's a standard process.
Right. But when the road itself causes the crash, who exactly are you supposed to sue?
That is the incredibly complex question at the heart of this material. The source stresses that accidents caused by defective roadways present legal hurdles that are astronomically higher than a standard auto collision.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the text outlines the potential entities that could be held liable, and it is not just the government.
Not at all.
It is a massive tangled web. It could be the specific government agency responsible for roadway maintenance. It could be third-party private contractors who were recently hired to perform repairs.
Yep.
It might be the engineering firms that designed a faulty drainage system years ago. It could be construction companies or even utility providers who dug up the road to lay a pipe and didn't restore the base properly.
There are so many moving parts.
And on top of all that, there might still be other negligent motorists involved whose actions worsened your specific crash.
Yeah.
But I really have to push back here on the reality of this.
Sure, okay.
If I'm a commuter and my car gets swallowed by a collapsing culvert on the Cross County Parkway, how on earth is it my responsibility to figure this out?
That sounds crazy, right?
It sounds like an impossible maze for a regular person to navigate. If the state points the finger at a utility company, and the utility company points the finger at an engineering subcontractor from 5 years ago, I mean, it sounds like a corporate game of hot potato.
That's exactly what it is.
Everyone blames someone else to bleed the injured person dry. Furthermore, how do you even sue the government? Doesn't the state have, like, sovereign immunity? It feels like a system designed by its very nature to make the victim just give up.
Your frustration is entirely justified, and that hot potato dynamic is exactly what happens in real life. The average commuter has no capacity to subpoena the maintenance history of a specific highway drainage pipe.
Right. Where would you even start?
You wouldn't. And to answer your point about suing the government, yes, municipalities and states generally have forms of immunity, but they waive that immunity in specific circumstances, provided you follow their incredibly strict, unforgiving rule.
I'm sure they're strict.
Very. And this is exactly why the text emphasizes that the rules of the game change entirely when infrastructure is involved. You aren't dealing with a normal 3-year statute of limitations for a car crash. When you want to hold a government agency accountable, you usually have to file what is called a formal notice of claim.
A notice of claim. Okay. And what does that timeline actually look like?
It is shockingly brief. In many jurisdictions, including New York, you have a very tight window, sometimes just 90 days from the date of the accident, to formally notify the municipality that you intend to sue them.
90 days. That's it.
That's it. If you are sitting in a hospital bed recovering from spinal surgery and you miss that 90-day deadline by a single day, your right to pursue compensation can evaporate entirely.
That is insane.
It doesn't matter how obviously negligent the city was or how severe your injuries are, the door just slams shut.
Wow. That is a terrifying ticking clock, which honestly explains why the source insists on such immediate action. But I noticed the advice goes far beyond the basic call 911 that we all know. I mean, anyone knows to call the police. But the text highlights an advanced strategic imperative, which is preserving the physical evidence of the roadway failure immediately. Why is that specific step so critical here?
Because of a concept in litigation known as the spoliation of evidence.
Okay, what does that mean?
Think about it practically. If a sinkhole opens up on a major parkway, the city's immediate priority is public safety and restoring the flow of traffic, right?
Sure, they need to get the road open.
Right. So the Department of Transportation is going to dispatch crews within hours to fill that hole, patch the asphalt, and clear away the debris.
Which makes total sense for traffic, but...
But for your legal case, they are essentially paving over the crime scene.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
The physical evidence proving that the culvert was rusted or that the asphalt base was improperly compacted by a contractor disappears beneath 2 tons of fresh concrete overnight.
Gone forever.
Yep. If you or an investigator working on your behalf don't photograph that standing water, the specific dimensions of the pavement failure, and the surrounding debris immediately, you lose the ability to definitively prove the hazard existed in the way you claimed it did.
That brings up another huge warning from the source text, and that's the absolute danger of giving recorded statements to insurance companies or municipal investigators before you've consulted an attorney.
Well, this is a big one.
I think a lot of people assume, hey, I'm the victim here, the road collapsed under me, I have nothing to hide by telling my story. Why is that instinct so dangerous in these specific infrastructure cases?
Because the people taking that recorded statement are highly trained adjusters and defense investigators. Their sole job is to protect the financial interests of the municipality or the multinational engineering firm.
They aren't on your side?
Not at all. They are looking for any microscopic opening to shift the comparative fault back onto you. If they call you 2 days after the crash, while you are still heavily medicated and traumatized, they will ask leading questions.
Like what kind of questions?
Well, if you innocently say something like, it was raining so hard, I guess I just didn't see the hole until I was in it, or I had just glanced down to adjust the radio, they will use those exact words against you.
They twist it.
Absolutely. They will take your honest reflection and legally weaponize it. They will argue in court that you failed to maintain a proper lookout, or that you were driving too fast for the weather conditions. And therefore, you are partially or entirely responsible for your own injuries.
Even though the road literally fell apart.
Exactly. They will try to completely obscure the fact that the road structurally failed in the first place. This is why the early intervention of an advocate who understands these traps is what actually makes the difference between proving liability and having your case dismissed.
Which brings us perfectly to the person attempting to navigate this impossible maze. The source material we are exploring today comes from the law offices of Norman Gershon. And looking at his profile gives us a really clear picture of why a standard fender bender lawyer simply cannot handle a municipal infrastructure failure. We are talking about a completely different tier of legal firepower.
Definitely. This isn't about high-volume firms settling straightforward rear-end collisions. The text highlights Norman Gershon's deep well of experience. We're talking over 35 years representing injured victims across a massive, jurisdictionally complex area. Westchester County, the Bronx, Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn.
That's a huge footprint.
It is. Taking on cases against the state or massive corporate contractors requires an aggressive, highly specialized form of trial advocacy. Insurance companies know and fear Norman Gershon for exactly this reason.
The text actually gives him a fascinating moniker. It refers to him as the attorney other lawyers call to try their toughest cases.
I love that phrase.
Right. That concept of a lawyer's lawyer speaks volumes. If I hire a local attorney for what I think is a simple crash, and it turns out a multinational utility company is at fault for a collapsed road, my local attorney might suddenly realize they are way out of their depth.
That is exactly what happens.
Yes.
Suing a State Department of Transportation or an engineering conglomerate is an agonizingly expensive and capital-intensive war of attrition.
They just try to drag it out.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The defense will try to bury the plaintiff in endless paperwork, file continuous motions to delay the proceedings, and bring in highly paid defense experts.
So how do you fight that?
To fight back, the plaintiff's attorney needs to be able to front the costs for their own world-class civil engineers, hydrologists to analyze the water flow, and metallurgical experts to prove the drainage pipe was structurally compromised.
That sounds incredibly expensive.
Yeah, it is. Most standard law firms simply do not have the capital or the specialized trial experience to risk that. So they call in someone like Gershon, who isn't afraid to fund the fight and take the case all the way to a jury verdict.
Mm.
And crucially, with his firm, you only pay if you win.
Which is huge when you were dealing with catastrophic medical bills. And if anyone listening is dealing with this in the area, the firm's number is right there in the materials. 914-485-1444.
Right.
And we need to look at what those jury verdicts actually look like to understand the gravity of these accidents. The source provides some highly specific numbers. And I want to be clear here, we aren't reading these numbers like they are winning lottery tickets.
No, not at all.
These figures represent the devastating mathematical cost of catastrophic life-altering loss. The text lists a $16.5 million verdict for an automobile passenger injured in a collision with a bus, a $14.5 million settlement involving devastating bus accident injuries, a $5.45 million verdict in a serious automobile accident, a $3.75 million verdict for spinal injuries, and a $2.5 million verdict for an intersection collision right in Westchester County.
What's fascinating here is what those numbers truly mean when you peel back the layers. A $16.5 million verdict isn't arbitrary. It is the calculated, immense burden of a destroyed life.
Yeah.
It accounts for potentially decades of 24/7 specialized medical care. It accounts for the cost of entirely retrofitting a home to accommodate a wheelchair.
Things people don't even think about.
Exactly. It replaces 40 years of lost earning capacity for a family's primary breadwinner, plus the immeasurable daily physical pain and suffering. Securing those numbers requires a very specific type of advocate, which is brilliantly illustrated by the client testimonials in the text.
I noticed that too. There is a really compelling duality in how his clients describe him.
Exactly. You look at the testimonial from a client named Nancy Joyce. She states, Norman worked his magic and got me a bigger settlement than I expected. He's a kind, caring, compassionate lawyer with a great sense of humor.
Which is so important.
It highlights the deep empathy required in this field. But then you contrast that with another client, Lance, who focuses on a completely different, almost surgical set of traits. Lance says he was thorough, well-prepared, and his courtroom demeanor was very professional.
It perfectly encapsulates the two different faces a lawyer must wear in these catastrophic cases.
It really does.
If you are a victim whose entire world has just been upended by a collapsing roadway, you are living in a state of constant physical agony and profound financial terror.
You're vulnerable.
So vulnerable. When you are sitting in that office, you desperately need the kind, caring, compassionate human being. You need someone to hold your hand and tell you it's going to be okay. But when that exact same lawyer steps into the courtroom to cross-examine a hostile municipal engineer or dismantle a corporate defense team,
you don't want the nice guy anymore.
Right. You do not want the nice guy with a sense of humor. You want the relentless, highly prepared trial tactician who commands the room and dissects the opposition's arguments.
Precisely. In these deeply complex liability cases involving government agencies, victims don't just need a lawyer. They need a protector. They need aggressive trial advocacy to actually force these massive entities to pay the maximum compensation. But they simultaneously require that personal, compassionate attention to help them mentally survive the grueling, multi-year process of litigation.
So what does this all mean? If we zoom out from the specific verdicts, you know, the checklists, and look at the totality of what we've uncovered today.
It means we have to radically reevaluate our perception of the daily commute. The foundation we are driving on is aging, it is fragile, and in many places, it is quietly failing.
Whether your accident is caused by a distracted driver crossing the double yellow line, or a failing rusted drainage pipe causing the Sawmill River Parkway to literally vanish beneath your tires, the legal landscape you are thrown into is a battlefield.
It really is.
The crucial takeaway from this source material is that when the infrastructure fails, the responsibility doesn't just disappear into the sinkhole with the debris. But successfully proving who is at fault requires immediate, rapid preservation of the evidence before it is paved over.
Crucial step.
It requires complex engineering analysis to establish the chain of causation. And above all, it requires a deeply experienced, battle-tested legal advocate, someone you can reach at 914-485-1444 to navigate the impossible maze of municipal liability and secure the compensation needed to rebuild a life.
And this leaves us with an incredibly important lingering question, a provocative thought for everyone listening to really mull over the next time they merge onto the highway.
Let's hear it.
As climate change continues to bring heavier, more concentrated rainfall events that rapidly wash away road subbases.
Which we are definitely seeing more of.
We are. And as our winters experience more erratic and frequent freeze-thaw cycles, our already aging infrastructure is only going to degrade at an accelerated pace.
That makes sense structurally.
Right. So if roadway collapses, sudden sinkholes, and failing culverts transition from being rare freak accidents to a routine, everyday part of the American commute, will we eventually see a fundamental legislative shift in how municipal liability operates?
Oh, wow. That is a chilling thought.
Think about the financial implications for the state. If the maintenance costs become utterly insurmountable, what happens when the government decides they simply cannot afford to be sued anymore?
They just change the rules.
Exactly. Will we see states legislating away their liability entirely, legally declaring that the very ground you drive on is an unpredictable at-your-own-risk environment?
That completely flips the social contract of driving on its head. I mean, you could be the safest, most defensive driver in the world. You could be perfectly alert, driving the exact speed limit, checking your mirrors.
Doing everything right.
Everything right. But if you are driving over a hollowed out cavity, just waiting for the right amount of pressure to crack all your defensive driving is completely useless. The old rules of the road simply do not apply when the road itself is the weapon.
It's a scary reality to face.
It really is. Well, that is all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us as we explored the unseen structural hazards lurking right beneath our tires and the intense legal battles that must be fought when the ground finally gives way. Stay curious, keep your eyes on the road, and drive safely out there.